and this may not be a popular answer, but you need to be prepared to work harder than you want to work. You're going to have to earn a lot of trust with the department, with your superiors. Some of them won't want to give it. It's going to take a long time. It might take years. Sorry to say it. It's what you're in for.
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. This is Weekly Scrap number 91. Tonight, we have two special guests, John Metz, Jeremy Olson. Jeremy is on Truck 7 in Boise, Idaho. John Metz is a fire medic with Nampa Fire in Idaho, and together, they are the authors of Firehouse Pranks and Antics. And it's a compilation of firefighter interviews. Guys, I am excited to dive into it, and it is my pleasure to have you both on as guests of Weekly Scrap number 91. Welcome, my brothers.
Thanks, Corley. Man, it's such an honor to be here. I was telling Jeremy, getting an invite, it's like seeing a Little League game on ESPN, man. So we really appreciate it. We're super humbled, especially after the guests you've had, man. Like, very, very honored to be here. So thanks for having us, man.
You guys are too kind. I'm extremely blessed in the caliber of people that agree to come on here and let me talk to them. So, and again, I love guys with passion, and that's what I got tonight. So, to everyone joining live, if you have questions for John, Jeremy, or myself, do not hesitate to throw them at us. And did I miss any? I mean, it was a very short intro, but did I miss anything or anything you guys want to throw in there?
No, that's good. Thanks for having us, Corley. We'll see you next time.
And we're done. And that's it. All right, in the books. Okay. There we go. Jacob Johnson's already chiming in. He said, "What's up, fellas?" Jacob, I can't wait to meet you. We're 2 weeks away. So there we go. I want to dive right off into it, if you guys are good with it. Talk to me about the book. Give me the rundown of how it came to be.
Oh, well, so John and I, we worked together for some time and had some good laughs and stuff like that. Well, we got a friend, Ted Corporandi. He hosts, after the Boise Fire Symposium, he hosts a lunch where a lot of the guys go up and just kind of hang out and, well, drink beer, tell stories, tell lies, all that good stuff. The genesis of it was at that meeting, and it was kind of this organic situation where people are just talking, some are telling stories. Then after a little while, you just kind of realize there's this aura of young guys or less experienced guys around the vetted fellas, some retired, some ready to retire, and they're just telling the best stories. We're just in stitches. Of course, we can't remember one of them, right?
Right.
But they're telling all these great stories, and in all of, we have a drink in our hand. We're just kind of watching along and going, oh, yeah, you know, something like that's happened to us or whatever. After that goes on for a little while, John and I were standing next to each other. I was just like, dude, we got to get some of these down on paper. And I shouldn't have said anything. He made me shake on it right there. And that was it.
That was it.
So the idea guy and the we're going to do this now guy.
Yeah. That was the thing, man, is we kind of like, we were like, this is awesome. And we're going to lose this history of some of these great men and women out there, right? That have worked together, have done a job, and like just all this stuff. But a lot of the humor involved, like, I mean, that's the stuff that, I mean, we both were just kind of in awe. And so just being able to be around guys like Chief Corporandi and like Mark Wesseldine, a bunch of other guys, and just kind of be that fly on the wall, that was just kind of the catalyst to the whole thing. And then we just ended up, just like he said, just shaking on it. And so it's funny when people say, oh, you wrote a book. Like, we didn't write anything, man. All we did is compiled like interviews with some of these people that we look up to. And so
we did some spell checking, and even that we did terrible on. Totally.
That is awesome. There's been so many times with an ice cold pop, a Modelo usually in my hand, sitting around with like guys and having these discussions. And then, like you said, it's just lost to the ether. It's just gone. And there's no record of it. Beyond the, you know, like the oral tradition passed down. So it's amazing what you guys have taken with that. Love it. How long did it take? Because you guys interviewed a lot of people. So when you guys got, did it start like what am I trying to say? Did it start casual and then get serious, or were you guys serious at the get go, or did it just morph?
It's kind of like kids in a candy store, especially with this guy here. He's just like, he had all these ideas of the people he wanted to reach out to. I had some people I wanted to reach out to. A lot of those were more local. And it was really nice having Chief Corporal Randy nearby and a couple of guys where we could just kind of officially just kind of do some runs through it and get going. And then we kind of got on a roll, and man, it kind of took off. It still took a long time, but
it was cool, man. Like, everyone who says that, you know, social media, this and that, like, most of the time, man, I just reached out, or Jeremy, on social media, and it would be, you know, like, this is probably three years ago, but, you know, guys we'd seen at a conference, or like maybe heard on a podcast like yours or something. And it was kind of weird. It was just a lot of cold calling, man. Like, they didn't know me.
Right.
You know, most of the time I didn't know them. And so that was kind of interesting. They're like, man, are you messing with me? I'm like, no, we really want to get your take.
Right.
And it's cool because we see – so the first guy we interviewed was, like, Chris Tobin, right? And
I love Chris.
Like, yeah, he's such a good dude, right? And it was just like – I just reached out to him, and, like, I was all nervous and stuff. But he's just, like, just a super awesome guy, and he told us some funny prank stories, and it just adds this element of, like, Chris Tobin that you probably wouldn't get from, you know, his tactics lecture or something. It's just like another side of these guys and gals we kind of looked up to. So once we got him on board, we realized, we're like, man, we could get some cool stories with some really cool people. And it just kind of escalated. We didn't have a magic number. It's not like we were trying to make any money or anything. We just ultimately wanted to print a book that we could hand to our buddies or guys we looked up to and make them chuckle, right?
Like, right on.
It really comes back to kind of what you're saying. You're really lucky to have the people that you've had on your show and stuff like that. And it's just this great community where you say, hey, I got an idea. I'd really like to try this out. And you have these big names responding, right, saying, hey, good idea. I can help you out with that.
You're like, seriously, you will?
Yeah. No. We're not disappointed very much.
Yeah.
No, and this is a question I want to throw at you guys, because we kind of have this in common. It's like, I reach out to people and say, hey, would you like to be on my unknown show, this thing called The Scrap? And you guys reached out and said, hey, we want to interview you about antics. And the thing that blew me away, whether it was, you know, because you guys had Isaacson and Tobin and Tom Johnson and all these names, and I don't want to keep naming names because I'll forget people. But it's the humility that they have and the just down-to-earth, like, willingness to share. So did that hit you guys like that the same way, or?
Well, here you have all these guys that you look up to, and they're just like the ultra pros in your field, and they're talking about how they're standing on a chair screaming like a little girl. You know, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely humanized them, but yeah, the humility was there. Yeah, it wasn't like once you kind of got in conversation with a lot of these people, it just kind of flowed naturally, like, just talking to you right now. Yeah, in the beginning it was kind of awkward a little bit, but dude, the whole process is crazy because you literally, like, record on the tape and we scribe how they told the stories as is. It wasn't like we edited it, right, or anything. And it was funny, like, we used to sit in Starbucks in McCall and just abuse the Starbucks. Like, the ladies would roll their eyes when they'd see us coming in.
Coming in, here they come.
Setting up office.
Yeah, we hand-scribed all those interviews. So it'd be like, play, rewind. But it was just awesome, man. Like, the whole experience, like, it was, I mean, like I said, it was all about just trying to encapsulate and capture some cool stories that maybe, you know, someone down the line will read, or someone has in their bathroom book or something. Just kind of trying to give back and make people chuckle a little bit, you know?
No. And to harp on the book for a minute, it is an awesome, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's an awesome bathroom read, because you can sit down and catch, you know, that's a perfect time frame, man. That's a compliment, man.
Yeah.
Yes. It's great, man. And I'll get to the other parts of it, but you can sit down there and hit Andy Starnes and have him give you some wisdom of a humor-based story, oral tradition passed down in a written form. It's fantastic. So,
I was going to say, that's awesome you brought up Starnes, because that was one of the things I found after connecting with some of these people, is, like, not just where we talked about that, but he was like, we're talking about, like, thermal imaging cameras and, like, training requirements and all this extracurricular stuff. Like, dude, I learned a lot outside of just, like, trying to scribe people's interviews. So
if you sit down with a Chief Starnes, yeah, and you don't learn something, I mean, that's just a byproduct of sitting down and having a conversation with him. You're going to learn something. That's awesome. I got Ann Walsh Lempesis. I'm sorry, Lempesis. I'm Take sorry. Tell the story, John. Tell the story about the, and this quotation, special sushi for Chief Banta. and again, so, hey, this is audience questions. You're welcome to pass on anything that you feel is not necessary, but go ahead.
Hey, Cap. So, Cap Lips is a captain where I work, and Chief Banta was getting surgery, so we made him a goodbye breakfast. We made him country sushi. You take corn dogs and you bake them, and you cut them up like sushi rolls, and you use the sticks as chopsticks. So we gave him a big platter with all the sauces, like ranch, ketchup, mustard. That was it. What's up, Cap? Thanks.
That is a that sounds like something that belongs in Oklahoma.
Yeah. You guys love it, man.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Okay.
That's delicious.
I got to start. The obvious question right out the gate is, do you guys, as the authors, as the people that did the research, do you have a favorite prank, antic, or shenanigan? Like, is there one that stands out above the others that you guys want to talk about and give special recognition to?
Queso.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell my favorite. There's so many, man. Like, it's almost like movies. Like, there's G-rated ones, PG, PG-13, rated R, and then we had a couple anonymous submissions where we couldn't even put a name that were incriminating, if you will. But
right.
It is hard because there's so many, but the one that stands out for me was Mark Wesseldine. He was from the FDNY. And we actually had him and Chief Corprandy in the same room and just laid tape. And he told a story about one of his fire. And I'm going to butcher it, man. But he's told a story. It's in the book. Some firehouse in New York City where he worked. And they had a guy come in who was a bully. And nobody really liked this dude. And he was just kind of a douchebag to everybody. So one guy kind of disappeared throughout the day. They didn't see him. Like, where's so-and-so? They're like, oh, we don't know, man. We haven't seen him. Only way, what he was doing is he took a warthog blade from a K-12 saw, right? He took it off the saw. He traced it on cardboard, right? And then he cut it out, detailed. Then he spray-painted it. So it looked like a perfect blade, right? And so later that night, everybody's in the common bunk. The bully guy goes to sleep. The way Mark tells it's genius, man. I wish I could, like, release the audio because he has this accent and stuff, but... So he mounts the warthog blade that's made of cardboard on the actual saw. Everyone's asleep. He pops on the light, rams the saw up, full bore, goes up to the guy, and he's like, who's the bully now or something? And he drops it on the guy's chest as he's laying on his back in bed. And, of course, the cardboard just, like, dissipates. But I guess the guy literally, like, pissed himself.
Oof.
And to me, like, that is the ultimate, like – I mean, it's brutal, but it's so creative and funny. That's the one that stuck out for me.
And the thing is, it's not just a prank. That's like here's a lesson, buddy. You know, the firehouse justice. You know what I'm saying? It's that belongs in a movie.
Absolutely. You know? Apparently, he tempered down a little bit after that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can imagine. So go ahead. Jeremy, do you have one that was...
Well, there's one that sticks out, and it's... It's based out of St. Louis, and this is kind of lore in St. Louis. But this...
See, the thing is, I've been doing the research, so I know exactly we're going with the pigeons. So go. Go. I love it.
So this one starts, and I love this one because you can just picture it. This is bored firefighters. You know, that's all there is to it, and just wonderful and terrible things happen when firefighters get bored. Well, this one starts out in a high-rise. I think it was like City Hall or something like that. This high-rise, and this gal, secretary or something, notices that there's pigeons outside the window of her office, which is not uncommon, except for that the fact that these pigeons had fire helmets on. And so, and not everybody knows, but some pigeons had black helmets, some pigeons had red helmets, and a few pigeons had white helmets, you know. Well, obviously, you know, an unnamed firehouse got a little bored one day, got some corn and a hot glue gun, and went to work. And after a while, there were a couple of battalions flying around in the skyscrapers of St. Louis. That's a pretty good one.
Dude, that is an awesome one.
Yeah.
PETA might not approve. But 100%, that is bored firemen at their finest.
Yeah, those are just a few, man. It's hard. There's so many good ones, and that was kind of the cool part. This, the whole book was just like a journey, right? Like, I mean, we talked to so many people and just got their tales and scribed it. Like, it's almost like anything. It's like, it, you're going to probably have a different one than Jeremy or me. There's one for everybody in there. So,
dude, when I read Tobin and St. Louis and the Pigeons, I'm not going to lie. I was dying on that one. Especially because they took the time to, like, so many red helmets, so many black helmets, and then one white helmet for each battalion. You know, it's the attention to detail that really sets it apart.
It's very impressive, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So, no, and it's throughout the book, and it's great. So, now, I hate this question, and I get it all the time, but I'm going to throw it at you because I hate it so much, so that's what I get to do. Did you guys have a favorite interview, a favorite person you talked to throughout the process?
I absolutely did. And I think it has more to do with the format.
Okay.
A lot of these, it was kind of like, you know, you're on a phone call or like we're doing now, maybe FaceTime or something like that. And we ran into a lot of great storytellers. But when we were in an office with Mark Wesseldine and Ted Corporandi, they're good buddies. They're both great storytellers. And we're sitting there face to face. You know, that is just the best because it's the closest thing to just being in a pub that we had in accumulating these stories. So that was by far the best one. And it was really organic because one story led to another. All of a sudden, I mean, we're 5 or 10 minutes in. And then Mark's like, hey, now I'm really starting to remember some. Right. So that was just the beginning, you know. And that was the best one. And I think if we were ever to do another edition or something, we kind of follow that format where we get a few guys together and just let them feed
off each other. Yeah. No, that's good. And you guys really captured that, I guess, by, cause that first opening chapter with them two, you really get it. Cause like one guy tells his story and it's like, oh yeah. And this is like something that's related to that, you know? And then the other guy comes back to, and it's not even like one upping. It's like just the firing of the memories, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Just back and forth.
Yeah, because so much of what we do, we just kind of file away and forget about because it's what we do. And then you're like, oh, wait, I remember the time that the guy lit the bedding on fire and walked out of the room and said, see you later, you know.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
I love flipping through this book, too, because, you know, people ask me, what's the funniest thing you've seen? I'm like, dude, I don't know. Just because you don't think about that stuff every day. I don't keep a journal. I probably should have, but shame on me for that. But yeah, it helps you recollect some of the good times that you've had in your career too.
I get to speak to every recruit class that comes in now. And one of the things I tell them is, I wish I would have done it. Start a journal and just write in it once a tour, even. Not even every shift or anything, just once a tour. Write in it memorable things that will spark you later. If nothing else, your kids will love it. Now, I don't know if any of them have even taken up the advice, because I wouldn't have when I was a recruit. So, but I try to say do that. All right.
That's good
advice. I really wish that I could pull out a journal and show my son now and say, check this out. You know, 2003, check this out, what we did here. This is hilarious. Or, you know, insert whatever. But anyway, I digress. So we go to, I'm going to spearhead right into your research a bit. And you guys, after each of your interviews, you guys hit your interviewees with the question of, and you had lots of different wording, not really lots, like two or three different phrasings of it. But the gist of the question was, has there been a shift in the humor culture in the fire service in your career? Is that fair to say that was the question?
Yeah, that was kind of a question we want to throw in. It was just like, hey, let's get a barometer, right? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Especially when you're talking to 20, 30-year veterans or whatever, right?
Yes.
And I remember, and back to the other one, like my favorite contributor was Dina Ali. Like, she's just awesome.
Yeah.
Like, her prank was funny, but it really related to this part too, because when we talked to her, she told her story and stuff, but then she talked about like just how intimidating it was, you know, her being on the line and this and that. And she talked about like how when she was pranked, she knew that she'd kind of been accepted, right? In a roundabout way. And I'm really paraphrasing, but yeah. And that was super important because a lot of the times, you know, I'm not advocating like crazy humor all the time, but it just shows that, like, you know, good humor, good natured firehouse pranks, it really, it just shows that the team dynamic is probably flourishing, that, you know, morale's good, the culture's probably good. We asked everybody that question, and yeah, Jeremy's much better statesman. He can kind of explain it more, but it was kind of his idea more than anything, really.
I do want to say that that question is what separates it from just a collection of stories into, it's what elevates it a level. I don't know the right word to say. It's what makes it better than just a prank collection.
It adds a little bit of dimension.
Yes, yeah. Depth, 100%.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing is, as John and I are kind of collecting these things, or as we have an appreciation for just all the this funny stuff that goes on in the firehouse, you kind of ask yourself, well, how can we preserve this? And I feel like the first way and the first thing you can do in trying to preserve it is identify it. And what do you do? Well, you get the people that are contributing, these great firefighters, and some of them are getting a little bit long in the tooth and stuff like that, and say, hey, is this the way it's always been? And try to get an illustration of where this culture is going, and maybe we can kind of, you know, does it need to be saved, or is it just intrinsic into our service?
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's varying degrees too. I mean, you can't go out and do like crazy mean stuff to people and disrespectful stuff, but there's like little things, and I'm not glamorizing like a culture that does pranks all the time, but it just seems like it helps, right, with morale in general.
No, 100%.
It's great for stories. I mean, we're stating the obvious here, but you know, most of the people were like, I would say a lot of the contributors were like, yeah, we are losing some of it. Like, you know, it's more like management's harder on it. It's not tolerated to this and that. And I think what it does, they're still there. It just adds to the creativity more, right? Like, people are getting more creative.
There is no doubt about that.
They can't set someone's like bed on fire now. Like, Corp Randy was telling us a story. Like, there were dudes that used to be like in the firehouse in San Francisco reading the paper. And like a guy would creep under the table and light the paper on fire underneath him. Like, I mean, can you imagine doing that in like your firehouse
today? Now? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can. But, you know, the buckets of water and just the good jest stuff. I don't know. It just brings something to the team, right?
Well, where there's joking, where there's name calling and nicknames and stuff like that, you're going to have more cohesion and more camaraderie.
Right.
And it's interesting to me, as we kind of lose a little bit of humor, of tolerance for good natured jesting. Here we're it seems as though we're slipping in that, and I think a lot of our contributors saw that too. Mm-hmm. We're also rising in the number of people that are going out of service on PTSD and stuff like that. And it's really important to identify that as, you know, not a complete coping mechanism, but right. You have to have a strong cohesion in your crew, and you have to be able to joke around. You have to be able to share when something's troubling you and be vulnerable, however that's returned upon you, in order to cope with a lot of this stuff. And here we're seeing PTSDs on the rise and things like that. And here we are, we're living with these people. Somebody rolled the dice and said, hey, this is your husband, this is your wife for a third of your life.
Right.
You're partners with these people. But you know what? Behave, because we're watching.
Right.
And that's not really healthy for us.
No, the one-third family, as I like to call it, the one-third family, man. It's what it is.
Yeah, the one-third family.
And unless you're really lucky and you get the quarter family, cause you got like four shifts, but, yeah, but no, the PTSD and all ultimately first responder suicide. I mean, it's a pandemic. That's an overused word in the last couple of years, yeah. But it's an epidemic without a doubt. Yeah. So, get my notes back up here, cause I don't want to go on a tangent. I do want to talk about gallows humor and the fact that it exists. Like, no, it is. And I go back. I don't know if there's a change. I had a wonderful captain when I was a very young firefighter. We went on a call. It was a nasty call on the interstate, I-35. Horrible accident, fatality, and a lady's face was basically cut in half. You know what I'm saying? It's just something you're not really meant to deal with, but that's what we do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember leaving the call. There was nothing we could do, really. We waited on the ME, and it was over, and everything was done. Traffic was moved on. You know, typical firefighters. We're done, and we move on. And driving back to the station on the headset. You know, back in the day, you had the push-button headset. And he was like, hey, does anybody feel like open-face sandwiches for dinner? Right?
I love it, yeah.
And I remember it to this day, but it was a way to cope, you know. And I don't know if we're losing that. Or anyway, what's your thought? Gallows humor. Well,
any time that you're able to identify those truths with a little bit of humor, it helps you. It helps that pressure release, you know. And similarly, I mean, I was on with a couple of guys. Wow, this is a long time ago now, but we had an airplane crash. It was a terrible situation.
Right.
A man and a couple of children died. And obviously we're on scene for long enough that we have to help get the bodies up together and stuff like that. Not everybody appreciated the looks of the pot roast that we had cooking in the crock pot after that, you know. In fact, the guys, you know, we might have made a couple of comments about that.
No.
And then we ordered takeout. So it was funny for a moment, but nobody was about to sink their teeth into that.
No, and again, it's wildly inappropriate in any sort of setting other than the people that have to deal with dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
You know, well, and that's where context comes in, right?
Right.
There's a prank in there, too, by one of the FDNY guys. I think it was Mio. And he talks about a new kid who's his first job on the nozzle was a fatal fire. And he come out, and the seasoned guy, he's sitting on the bumper. He's like, were you on the nozzle? And he's like, yeah, someone died in the fire. And he like flicks a cigarette in his face. He goes, nice job, you murderer. Basically insinuating he didn't do his job.
You didn't do it. Right.
Yeah, like in the book, it's just, yeah, I think that, yeah, it's like that again is like, they're making light of the situation in a way that, you know, you can process it. And it's bringing people together. It's showing camaraderie. Like, I'm a huge fan of gallows humor personally, but I can also see how it can offend some. It just, again, it comes back to that group cohesion, you know?
No, absolutely. And the motivation and the relationships involved, you know, I don't know. It's a tough one. Definitely. And I think you guys hit on it in the book. Through the telling of the stories, so I think
if we're not addressing that stuff, it just gets pushed down deep inside with no expression at all. And how healthy is that?
Right, until it cannot be pushed down anymore.
Right.
So, and maybe someday scientists will come up with a better way to deal with it than gallows humor. But I think it is a definite needed coping mechanism until they come up with something better. So I'll leave it there. I didn't mean to go dark and go all gallows humor. And what's your worst story of trauma and dealing?
Yeah, totally. Jeez, Corley, come on.
Yeah, it's the scrap.
The scrap is for the children.
Where do you guys see the culture of fire department humor heading? Is it safe? Are we doomed? What's your take as the de facto aficionados on fire department humor?
Well,
where are we going?
I mean, we just kind of put a sample out there, man. And what I like about the projects we did is we used everyone from FDNY, right? That kind of has its own culture. Like everyone, I mean, let's be honest, looks up to them and what they do. I mean, we had guys from there and gals. We had people from the Midwest, big cities, small cities, volunteer departments, departments in Canada, right? We're by no means like the officials on humor. We just want to get a good sample to kind of see where we're at. And I think overwhelmingly, yeah, people kind of say we're losing a little bit, but it's still there. It's still there. And I think it comes to creativity in a sense, right? It's not as blatant pranks. Like one contributor talked about, they make fish tacos at night. This is Captain Lazenby in Long Beach. Love the guy. But they'll have a special pile where they'll cut up the yellow sponge and batter it. And that's the special tacos, right? And then some guys will just come in hungry and they'll have a sponge taco. Just little things like that.
Right. No, 100%.
I don't think we're losing that. I think we're losing, talking to some of the old timers, you know, some of the, I don't know, the more crescendo-like pranks, right? Like the more blatant stuff. I don't know. I think we're still in a good spot. Like from everybody that says, I think it's kind of gradually becoming more regulated and monitored per se. And you can get in a lot more trouble if you're not like PC in your prank.
Sure.
I think it's, I mean, from the book, you know, from what everybody we asked, it seems like that was kind of the general consensus.
Well, and a big thing I got out of, I didn't mean to cut you off, Jer, but I'll get you back. But I didn't get any sense of maliciousness or, if, you know, it never crossed the line into bullying. You know what I'm saying? It was always in a acceptance manner. Does that make sense? Like, you are now one of us. You know, that's the reason you're getting this. Because now,
go ahead.
Well, the guy with the K-12 and the cardboard blade was a little, but that was just, I don't know. All right, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, he didn't cut me off at all. But I do think that as we look forward into the future of humor and stuff, I mean, obviously, in this day and age, we're not going to have a whole lot of like naked firefighter jokes. You know, it's just not going to happen these days. You're going to have to get a little bit more creative and a little bit more subtle. When you're living with guys, that shouldn't be too difficult. But another thing that we're kind of looking at too is a separation of the crews. When you spend less time together, you're going to, you know, you can set up a prank and nobody comes out of their room that evening,
right,
or something like that. And when you, not that having separate dorms is a bad thing, but man, I talked with my dad, who was a Portland firefighter for 30 years. They had singular dorms, and the kind of stuff that went on after bedtime, you know, it's good stuff, and you're there to see it and all that. Now guys, you know, they knock off at 6:30 in the evening, 7 in the evening, watch YouTube or Netflix or whatever, and you just don't have that interaction. You're not able to booby trap their recliner or whatever.
No, 100%, 100%. I am anti private dorms, even though I know that the snoring, the sleep, and everything is important. I get it. I really do. But man, the common dorm room is such a point of camaraderie, especially coming back at 2 a.m. after a lift assist. You know, there is no better bonding than that.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad to hear that that there's people out there that acknowledge that there's baggage associated with separating crews.
So I'm so huge on guys being close, and so anyway, I'm probably a minority on that, so I won't belabor the point. Let's get back into the notes if I can pull them up properly. All right, I got that. Conferences, because this is the thing, is I met John online, and I meet so many people online. I love social media and I love getting to meet people, and I met John online, but I actually got to meet John in Vegas at FD Tactics. We watched Romagus, we watched Riley, we watched Ryan Wall, and it was great. And then afterwards, I think we were at New York, and we just sat and drank a few adult beverages and discussed stuff, and it was good times. But how important is getting outside of your own department and getting to a conference and yeah, just getting to know other people?
It's immensely important. I mean, what it is, you can do, you can have really good perspective on your department and strive forward in that. And then going out to external trainings and conferences and stuff, it lifts you up to a 40,000 foot view.
Right.
And you're able to see all around you and experience the big picture, the true big picture, something that you cannot attain in your own microcosm.
No, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun, man. Like, yeah, I love to go to conferences and, like, outside trainings. It just makes you better. You get to meet, you know, super cool people. I'm, like, giving you all these cliche answers, man. I get, like, a D-minus for this interview question. Like, oh, Corley,
no, super you met awesome. Me. I was a super cool person. So you got an A+. Sweet,
man. Yeah, no, it's funny because it just gives you, like, I don't know, especially if you're, you know, in a place, like you were talking about earlier, that person – or maybe it was pre-show that you know, is struggling, needs to be motivated and challenged. It's kind of like a reset, a reboot. Like, yes, you learn a ton and you get to network with people like we have. Like, some of these people I met at conferences, you know, I'm like, hey, like Gary Lane, man. Like, he came to Boise and taught a class, and we both had skateboarding in common from the past and kind of clicked. And right when I called him about this book, he was super psyched. He's like, heck yeah, man. Like, it's super awesome. And then you can always, like, I mean, a lot, like for me, like a lot of the Brothers in Battle guys, like I met in conferences, and they're still my mentors. Like, I call them up, I mean, for little things on the job all the time. And like, hey, man, I couldn't, Like, literally, I couldn't force this door. What can I do better? And then next thing you know, you're hanging out at their station practicing baseball swings, like
right.
Brian Olsen yes. and some of those dudes. It's like, I don't know, man. It's just this network of people that, like, it's cool to experience for me and probably Jeremy. And most people tuned in the show right now, so super important.
I like that. I had to write down the timestamp on that because I like that sound bite. I always have to be careful when I catch a good sound bite. So, no, absolutely. Can you get
Jeremy sound bite? Well, not me, man. Come on.
We'll see. I may write down another one. But no, the crazy part is when you go to these conferences and you meet these guys and you step out of your comfort zone, and you say, hey, how's it going? I'm so-and-so from nowhere, and shake their hand. And the cool part is they're like, it's not about where you're from. It's about your passion. It's about your dedication to the craft. And all of a sudden you have someone who shares that with you, who is on a level above you, and that you can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, I have this problem. And they answer it. And it's like, holy crap. It's amazing.
There's a caveat to that too. I can see where that can rub people wrong sometimes. The way, like, hey, I went to this conference, I met all these cool people, and you come back to your department and you're kind of the pariah. I mean, for the record now, I work with some of the best men and women in my fire department. I love them to death, man. Like, had I been working with these people my whole career, I don't know if I'd be engaged in conferences as much, to be honest. Sometimes that culture might push you to those conferences and whatnot, but it's not distracting from the fact, too, that I can learn a lot of this stuff from my own department, right? And, like, they're some of the best men and women I work with. So I feel like I'm lucky. I have the best of both worlds. I can go to conferences, and I get to go to a job where people I work with are just as good as anybody else in a conference. So
no, 100%. And the bring back is such a big deal. When you bring it back, the messaging you bring back will really affect the absorption or rejection. You know, if you come back and say, guys, you guys are all a bunch of, No, 100%. All right. Number one question that I am asked on the scrap, whether it's a Tactics on Tap, on the scrap, wherever, is I'm a fired up guy. I went to this conference. I got this skill. I want to change my department. But my chief, my captain, my senior guy doesn't want that to happen. Right? So, no matter what, there's some version of that question that gets asked. Like, how do I bring change to my department? So I wanted to throw that at you guys, because you guys have interviewed a ton of people, and say, what is your answer to that? Not that there's a good answer. I'm just saying, I'm throwing it at you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no salt myself, but I've been in the fire service for about 19 years, which offers a little bit of perspective. And what's interesting to see, and this may not be a popular answer, but you need to be prepared to work harder than you want to work.
Love that.
It adds, you need perspective and you need some patience. So you're going to come back and you're not just going to, you know, get to rewrite an SOP or something like that. You're going to have patience. You're going to have to earn a lot of trust with the department, with your superiors. Some of them won't want to give it. And it's going to take a long time. It might take years. Sorry to say it. It's what you're in for.
Dude, I love that. And I really want to say this, because I rarely have two people on at the same time. So this is like Chris Tobin and Lex Shady were one. Yeah. Mike and Ann Galliano were the others. So
nice.
And so that's where you're at. That's the elite company you guys are in. But I got to say this, is that I just wrote down 3711 as that was a great soundbite. The thing you just said was really, really solid, man. So in this competition I have between John and Jeremy in my head.
He wins every time, man. I'm a kook.
I'm kidding, man. I hope you guys take it.
Really a kook.
Go ahead. John, do you have anything to add to that?
It's the same. I was trying to be funny, man. You just pour an ice bucket on their head, tell them it's a prank and that they're wrong every day. It'll change their mind.
I like it.
Like he said, I mean, it goes all over the place. I think if you just continue to have passion and you can influence one person, it doesn't even have to be at your department, and pass it on. That's what we're all trying to do, right?
Absolutely.
It's cliche, absolutely, but it's kind of true, you know. Just have that one person. I know Gagliano, who's in Boise actually today. Shout out Captain Gagliano. He has that account of that This House Rocks class, and he talks about the accountability partner. Yeah, have that accountability partner, you know. Have that one person you can you can push and they can push you. I mean, that's all you can really do is that one person, right? If it works, things will follow. If not, like, yeah, keep bashing your head against the wall until it's flat. I don't know. It's a real problem, man. It really is.
No.
Other thing that I think is really important too, is to seek mentors and seek help. I think a lot of guys think they got to take things all on their own.
Nice.
And, a lot of guys have tried that before and they've failed and they've gone back into the shadows and they've given up. And to pick their brains and say, hey, what worked for you? Where'd you leave off? I'd like to pick up where you left off. We do a whole lot of reinventing the wheel, you know, and I know I rub shoulders with some guys that are just exceedingly adept at their job and they're exceedingly adept at getting things done. If I came to the table with something that I wanted to change in my department, you better believe I'd be buying them a beer or coffee
right
after
on.
Shift
right on.
And kind of just picking their brains on things.
I love it. I got to catch you guys up. Okay. So we got Jeremiah King says, such a brilliant idea. Your book is now on my Amazon wish list. Thanks for collecting these stories in one place. Looking forward to it. You will not regret it, Jeremiah.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
Thank you, sir.
Stephanie Norman said, John Metz, you're a badass. So,
true.
Shout out, Stephanie. She's a medic where I work. She is awesome.
Anthony Floyd said, legends. Yeah. Mitch Chenault said, John and Jeremy, good to see you guys. And there we go. We are.
What up, Mitch?
Nice.
All right.
Good to hear from you, fellas.
Let me see if I want to ask.
So we have four viewers? That's
no, we're killing.
We're
killing.
Doing all right.
Number one.
Sweet.
We haven't run them all off yet, but we'll work on it. Yeah, we can focus. We can get this done. All right. Number one question. The role of social media in the modern fire service, where do you see it moving forward?
I think it's great, man. I think it's such a good tool personally. Like, and I get there's humility involved and stuff like that. And some people have different views of why people put stuff out, but like, let's take your show for instance, right? Like your show's a part of social media. One of my best friends, Tyler Greensfelder, who's an Anchorage, Alaska captain, listened to your Aaron Fields show, made show notes, emailed them to me, gave them to his crew, and I printed some off, gave them to my crew. Like, I mean, it's a great way of information sharing and learning stuff. I think the future of that kind of, connection and sharing of information, it's super, super important, super popular. The one thing, the drawback, I think, of social media that, I mean, kind of pisses me off, to be honest, is the shit like hitting it hard from the yard, like where they just trash people. I get it. It's funny. Don't get me wrong, some of it. But I mean, like, I don't know. I think that could be kind of just mean, man. We're all in this together. Like, I think that kind of stuff, like, we should draw a line and just, it's not funny, man, because it's like people are trying to do the same job. So that's where I see it. Like, if you want to be positive and spread stuff, cool. If you're going to be mean, you're going to be a douchebag, then, like, I think it's up to people to call you out on it. So.
I like, dude, and that's coming from the guy who wrote Firehouse Pranks and Antics. When he's,
I did write, compiled.
Co-author, John Metz, I see it right there, John Metz, it's in yellow. No, but 100%, man, that's a great, great point. And if I was giving out points, because it's not the five questions yet, but if I was giving out points, that's max points for mentioning Aaron Fields' episode, because it was a really good one. So
it was so good, man. All your episodes are good, bro.
No, Jeremy, go ahead. Role of social media moving forward. What do you think?
What's social media?
Yeah. Jeremy still has a fax machine. That's how we get a hold of each other.
He's got the
like it. My take is it's a tool, and it should be, you know, it should be one of those things that's used for good, for education. And if it's used for those things, I'm all in supporting you, but I'm not going to be on it.
Fair enough. No, that's fair. I agree. There's a great quote. I hate it when I miss a quote, but it's like something about change isn't mandatory or survival, because you don't have to survive. You know, I butchered it, but you get the idea. All right. Someone in the audience, correct my terrible adaptation of that quote. All right. My main question I have for you guys, are you guys going to do a volume 2?
Yeah. So here's the deal, Corley. Like, we're just firefighters. Like, I had a background in magazine writing and interviewing and a lot of stuff specifically with Whitewater and stuff. So I was kind of privy to interviewing people and stuff like that. The problem I feel like that would inhibit us with volume two is the marketing and promotions of it, right? Like we spent a lot of time, and after I was done with it and we were done, we just kind of shelved it.
Right.
It's not about the money, but like everyone's like, oh, you're an author. Anybody can be an author. You can self-publish a book if you have a couple thousand dollars. Like if you want to draw pictures of like stick figures, like you're an author too. It's all about like having that money, putting it out. And so to me, it'd be like, absolutely, I would be all in to scribe the interviews, reach out to people. It's just like keeping up with the promotions and like trying to get it out there. And it's to me that we'd have to have someone else to do that.
So. Understand.
When we look at it, you know that the market is rife. I mean, there's not a limit to the number of stories, great stories that are out there. And if it came down to just us doing the interviews and even scribing them, man, in a minute we would. Our goal at the beginning of this, we'd give a high five if we broke even. Obviously, can't take away from the kids' education to put volume two on the shelf and
right,
all of that.
Right.
You know, so it's something that's intriguing to think about. We're both excited about some changes that we might do in volume two. We'd have a lot more anonymous, and as we mentioned before, just kind of do a group thing quite a bit. So, yeah, it's crossed our minds. We'll see where it goes.
Okay, fair. Yeah. Keep me posted because I want to know. And I want to – Chad Small has a question for you guys if you're ready for it. It's what makes up a good prank? Break it down. And he's being very specific here. Break it down like Aaron Fields breaks down nozzle movement.
Well, Chad, the first thing we have to agree on is common language, right? I love Aaron Fields, man. I love that episode. I don't know, dude. Like we're not the judge and jury of it. Like we're like literally just put them together. But you know when something's super funny, right? Like one of them, this guy had a cricket that would chirp. I think his name was Dylan, and in certain pitches, and you could never find it. Like it's just stuff like that. It's just funny. Like it has to be something that like. I don't know. It's going to make you laugh and make your buddies laugh. And it's just not mean. I don't know about the blueprint. Cause again, we're just kind of the messenger with it. But if you read the book, I think you'll find a common theme is it's something that everyone at the kitchen table is just going to giggle about. Right. Like,
well, I think the biggest component is context. You have to understand the context of your crew, the context of where you fit into that crew, you know, and there's a lot that really feeds into that. And there are just some things that are not going to be funny to anybody else in the world, except for you and your brothers and sisters around the kitchen table that particular day. And that's just a matter of fact. And that's something that we kind of ran into in compiling these stories is some of these, man, they're funny stories, but you put them on paper and you just don't get it.
Right.
You're missing that context.
Right.
No. So you need to be astute enough to understand what that context is.
And like when I read chapter one, which is Wessel Dine and who's the other,
Ed Corporandi.
Corporandi. So I get the names wrong. I don't want to butcher the names, but when I read Isaacson's, I read it in his voice, you know what I'm saying? With the New York accent, you know what I'm saying, and everything. And that kind of, to me, it kind of made it come alive in feeling it. Now, I want to ask this, because this was sparked by Chad Small's question, and which is, because you said context, the context of your crew, context of the prank. Do you feel like the, and I'm trying to get this right, so bear with me while I work through it in my own head. The guy with the K-12 and the cardboard blade, right?
Yeah.
That one had a purpose that was like, hey, your behavior is no longer acceptable, and I'm proving it through this prank to make it. And then other ones are like pranks of acceptance. Like, we are now pranking you because you are one of us, you know?
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like there's a broad categories of pranks that you guys discovered, or is it pretty much just acceptance mostly? And then a few justice. What do you guys think?
It's awesome because there are those universal ones, like, it's always going to be funny to watch a probie get a bucket of water dumped on from the roof. You know, that's just always going to be there. There are the contextual ones where you know people intimately, and then there's these other universal ones where it's just like, whatever happens, whatever occurs, it's going to be funny in a certain context, you know?
No, absolutely. So, okay.
Yeah, I think you can get away with some of the teachable pranks like the K-12 saw now, right? Like, I mean, think of that versus like just being confrontational, right?
Right.
Like, if you know you're going to have an issue with someone, like light them up with a prank, and then there's this umbrella of humor that you can function under, right? Like, at least maybe he didn't think it was funny because Mark never told us the back half of that story.
Yeah, what the fallout?
Yeah, yeah, totally. But I don't know, man. Like, it was funny. It brought a prank that we did in my old department is when you think of the blackboard portion, don't call out a prank unless it's done. Like, there's nothing cool about a halfway finished hot route.
Right. No, yeah, there you
and
go. So
we did that, man. We had our captain on April Fool's Day. We got this rooster and we kept him in my car. It was still really cold, so it was super calm, right? And then me and my buddy Tyler Paul, we set our alarms for midnight and we got up. And then we were going to let the rooster out in our captain's office. And then as it got hotter, right, he'd start to like, look, 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 look. So yeah, like that. If you're going to have a prank, make sure you got, you know, hey, you're in charge of door, like the same kind of tactics. Cause we kind of screwed up our
the delivery.
Yeah, man. Like, just how you got to train on it. Yeah. If you're going to do something where timing and the element surprise is crucial, then yeah, have a plan.
Hell yeah. You didn't try that against me, did you?
No. Different.
All right. Yeah, it's good stuff so far, but I always like to ask, and you cannot include firehouse pranks and antics, but book or books that you think firefighters should read. I always ask the question of the guests. What you got?
Well, I mean, there's a litany. I mean, you got Norman, Dunn, Brannigan.
Love it.
I think those, I mean, obviously there's a ton out there that anybody should read. Honestly, if you're a firefighter, reading a trade magazine, you're going to be all right. If you're a truckie reading anything more than Clifford the Big Red Dog, good on you.
Gorillas.
and not to be unoriginal, but kind of my Sermon on the Mount, the thing that you kind of refer back to, it's Andy Fredericks, man. Yeah. His compilation is just, it's good for boots on the ground. It's good for the brass. It just keeps everybody grounded, everybody able to strive for something.
No, and if you don't like to read, go watch his keynote. And yeah, you don't need that nozzle kid. And 100%. No, I love that. John?
Yeah, I got.
You so don't get off. You don't get off.
So yeah. if you're not a firefighter, you got to read Christensen Zolan's Firefighter Interview Rule Book because that's going to be the most important book to get the best job in the world.
So you can
after
be.
That. Yeah, yeah. After like that, it. Like, for me, there's this book, and I've looked at the list, which I think is super cool on your site. You actually have the books the guests recommend.
I got to update so cool, it. Man. I got to update yeah. it. Yeah, I know. Go ahead.
You're the one, like, 50 now. But, I mean, yeah, man, you put a lot of work in. That's super awesome. But for me, the book that kind of changed me, it's called Matterhorn. It's by Carl Marlantes. It's a fictional account of basically a lieutenant in Vietnam and his soldiers in the Aisha Valley, but it's based on his experience. And that book just to me, I don't know, it changed something, man. It really summed up a lot of things like what it's like to be uncomfortable, what it's like to be in a team, what it's like to deal with terrible, tragic situations. To me, that's my favorite book in the world. Enough so, Corley, like I actually went to Vietnam, bought a motorcycle and rode out to the Aisha Valley and checked
really?
Out exactly where it was. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
like, it was super moving, man. And so I always recommend that book to people. It's not fire related and it's a story, but Matterhorn is like hands down my favorite book.
No, you got me to read it.
Really? Okay. No. And this is the thing is, and I'm not taking away from Jeremy's suggestions because they're solid. After 91 yeah. scraps, it's like, I don't get many new books suggested. And so when I hear a new one, I'm like, and then it's really even cooler when you have that powerful of a example to go with it of I went there and drove there on a motorcycle. So that's pretty strong, brother. So
thanks. Yeah, it's great, man. It's the real deal.
Here we go. This is one of my favorite parts of any scrap, which is we have a thing we do, and it is called the 5 Questions for Firefighters. The answers are completely your guys' opinions. It's different because there's two of you, so you get to answer in sequence.
Yeah, we'll be quick.
Yeah, we'll go back and forth on who has to answer first, because you can't say ditto. But, the points are arbitrary. I assign them the answers. There is no right answer. It's completely your opinion. So, John and Jeremy, are you ready for the 5 questions for firefighters?
Let's do it.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, who's going first? You guys get to decide.
Jeremy will.
Jeremy's.
I'm just kidding.
Got it.
I'm kidding.
Jeremy's first on question one. On the odds, Jeremy goes first. There we go. Jeremy Olson, what is the number one issue facing the modern fire service?
Number one issue facing the modern fire service. Well, you know, kind of what comes to mind right now is here we have the millennial issue. We have the, you know, how do we keep people engaged and how that looks. What we're really dealing with is a societal change, the same as we've always been dealing with societal change, right? Mm-hmm. That does have some operational ramifications for us. And, look at the last couple of decades. Fire departments, we're always expanding what we get involved in and stuff like that. It comes down to training, being prepared for what might come down the pipe. What might come down the pipe right now that maybe our community hasn't seen before. Man, we're really looking at a lot of this, civil disturbance type stuff. You know, we had a resurgence when we had Occupy Wall Street. Now it's defund the police and stuff like that. We're in Boise, Idaho, for God's sake, and we have flak jackets and rapid response kits for active shooters and things like that. You know, so it's the same as it always was, because the biggest challenge is to stay on top of training. But staying on top of training for what?
Right. Oh, that's solid, man. The uncharted waters.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a good bar to set. Now, I'm turning this into competition. John, you get to follow that. Yeah. Number one.
And go.
Number one issue.
Bob. I bet $1. I don't even follow that up, man.
Solid.
I'm telling you, bro, he's the statesman. I think it's culture. I think that it is firehouse culture and management basically enabling people who might be good at the job but like are douchebags and allowing them to continue doing it. I think there's nothing worse than having, to say prisoners run the prison and just ruining other firefighters who are like super gung-ho and company morale and stuff. And it's a yes or no question when you go to a department. Do you have a good culture? Yes or no? And to me, that's the biggest challenge, is we talk about strategy and tactics of how to solve other people's problems. But, you know, outside of Scott Thompson's book, the Positioning Small Groups for Success and stuff, it's like, where do we get resources to fix the cultures, right? Like, I think that's the biggest issue is trying to have that good culture.
And how do we definitively identify that it needs changing?
Yeah, exactly.
I got to write this note. Dude, that was...
Was that close to Jeremy? Nah, it wasn't close.
Above and beyond, man.
No, I'm going to say this. Like Jeremy's answer was really, really solid. And I thought you were going to get crushed because he got to go first and put you on behind. I really did. And then, dude, I'm telling you, I wrote down the note. Do you have a good culture? It's a yes or no answer. I'm going to steal that. I want to borrow that and put it in a presentation. That is that is powerful, dude. Like, it's a yes or no question.
Yeah, I feel like some I've heard somewhere else. That's not like...
Fair enough. I get it.
But it is. I really think that's true, man. There is no, like, there's no excuse, right? Like, it is a yes or no question. And it's going to vary, but, like, legitimately, right? If you ask every department member that and then take the majority of the votes, 51% say yes, then that's a good culture, right? I don't know how you measure it, but that's kind of how I look at it.
No, I love it. And I wanted to say that, and I wanted to tell you. And again, nothing. I've never had an original thought. Everything I do is I've taken from somewhere. So
yeah, you need both.
That's it. So, guys, great answers to number one. Here we go. What is the thing, number two, what is the thing you are most excited about for the future of firefighting? Oh, wait. John, you have to go first on even.
I think... it's back to that again, and I actually have his book here, but like this, right? Like the you know, Chief Thompson's
great book.
I think, you know, we read a lot of leadership stuff and stuff, and we're always going to be like operationally sound, but it's teaching people and managers and chief executive officers how to enable and let a good culture flourish. I think that's the next. I'm excited for that because I think it's going to trickle all the way down in how we hire firefighters and look at people who, you know, we want to spend, what do you call it, your third family with. I think I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see the kind of the emphasis into that, to creating these good cultures in these fire departments from one station to, you know, 50 stations. That excites me.
Very nice. Jeremy?
Well, short term, what I'm excited about is turning out for the next big one.
Yes. Right? Yes.
and then kind Visible. Of on a more – Yeah, right. On a more macro scale, it's, you know, for all the talk of the glory days being behind us and stuff like that, there's no shortage. There will never be a shortage of problems to solve. And guess who they're going to call, you know? And so it's what's coming around the bend. And also, you know, I'm looking at these young up and comers. Some guys are just getting out of academy, and you can tell they have a spark.
Yes.
And you can tell that someday they're going to be leading problems that I can't even conceive of yet. And it's going to be neat to follow that through my career and then beyond my career.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Love them both.
Nice, bro.
I'm not sure if I like doing multiple people better or single person. You know what I'm saying? I'm not.
Oh, yeah, you're on the fence?
I'm trying to figure this out. No, because part of me wants to, like, award a winner each time, and I don't feel like that's fair, you know? All right. Number three, the best rank or position to be in the fire service. And this one goes to Jeremy first.
Gosh, you know, for one, I really love that question. And that's a question that I've found myself asking people, anybody that's vetted in the fire service, whether it's at conferences, if you have the opportunity to have a drink with somebody, or in our own department, people of rank or experience. I love asking them what their favorite position has been and why. And
oh, I like the why. That's good. I might even. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously you go on with that and do that a couple of dozen times and you see some themes. One theme that I've really seen is, well, you know, a lot of times it's when he was on a truck captain or something like that. And I think a lot of that has to do, well, for one, for the because of the operational superiority of truck work. But aside from that, too, is I think working in big companies, people really like that for obvious reasons. There's a much bigger social dynamic. But kind of what I really would hang my hat on is if you are working with a crew that operates at a high level, don't give that up quick. Whatever position you are, and I've heard a lot of chiefs, a lot of captains say that. Some have regretted moving on a little bit too quick from a crew that trains hard, they laugh, they have a good time, and when they go on a call, they're looking forward to that challenging call because they know that they're up to that task. Don't move on from that. Soak that up.
Dude, that's nice. I don't know. I don't get a lot of – John, no pressure. I don't get a lot of original answers to that question. It's like usually someone picks or dodges. Dude, that was solid, man.
That wasn't to dodge. All right.
No. I'm saying like what I took from it was when you're a part of a high functioning crew, I don't care if you're the rookie to the top end guy, enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's a rarity. And dude, that's a I've not heard that. That's what I took away from it. Whether you meant
what
that or not.
What other than that is going to offer you more fulfillment?
Dude, agreement, man. Dude, that was a great, great answer to a question that I've heard a lot of times. Like, if anybody's watched the scrap, you know that I give max points for company officer only. But go ahead, John.
Oh, man. Again, eclipsed by that.
That's tough. Go ahead. If you can rise to bat, I give you kudos.
Man. For me, it's just like I just like being a fireman, right? Like I like where I'm at. Specifically, And this goes to Captain O'Connor, who's a truck captain, being a fireman on the squad, not on the truck. That's what I'm going to say. I just like being back set, man. That to me is the best. I got no visions of ever really doing much more.
I love it. No, and I love embracing the where you're at. Don't get me wrong. So I do want to say one thing that I wanted to say earlier, but then Jeremy distracted me with his eloquent answer, which is, if truck guys could quit eating crayons, then they could be tactically superior. So
I'm going to write that one down, all right?
Yeah, that's solid. And I kid because we only run trenches here. So,
that's funny, man.
Number four, the best advice you have ever received. Number four goes to John first.
I love this question, and I heard this from somebody else in the fire service, but you're going to fail, and basically how you recover from failure is going to set the tone of who you are and what you do as a person, as a man, as a family man, as a fireman, of anything. So I just had this conversation in the past too. It's like, I was in that failure spot not too long ago. Well, actually a lot. And it sucks, but it's true. It's how we recover and how we recover from that. So I think that's the best advice. Really have some awareness, some compassion for yourself when you're feeling that way. Realize that it's going to pass. But it's how you recover from it, right? So I think that's the best advice I've ever heard.
That's nice, dude. No, and it transcends the fire service. I mean, honestly, man. Husband, father, yeah. Brother, mother, yes. Jeremy?
Well, Captain Jason Barnard, Boise Fire retired. He's kind of the mentor of the or the godfather of the present mentors in Boise Fire and beyond. Good man. He gave me a piece of advice once that really kind of struck me between the eyes. He says, when it's time to catch frogs, catch frogs. And I just love that because, you know, at one point in my career, I came too close to selling my soul to the fire service. And if I went down that path any longer or too far, it could have been a great detriment to my family. And guess what? It would have ended up ruining my career as well. And so, you know, just get out there. Your family is number one. You got to spend time with them. You're no kind of man if you don't put your family first. Each member of your family needs to have dedicated time just for them in your 4-day or your time off. Some people it's catching frogs. For me, it's playing fairy princess unicorn. You know, that's important time. So stick with it. It's going to end up being an investment in your career as well.
That's awesome, man. And here, the more I hear about Idaho, like, I've never been to Idaho, so I'll preface with that. But like, Oklahoma is where I'm from, and we have a panhandle, but it goes sideways. And then, like, your guys goes north and south. So, yeah. Apparently, if you can reference catching frogs as advice, then you're very Okie-like.
So, well, thank you.
Yeah. It is a compliment. So,
all right.
No, okay. Dude, great answer, man. I think that might be the first time frogs have been mentioned in best advice in the five questions. All right. Final question. Number five, and it goes to Jeremy answers first. Heavy fire, searchable space, would you rather be on the nozzle or first in VES?
Okay, so I have to reference a mentor again. Ted Corporandi says that there's no high other than being first on the nozzle, attacking fire. The only high that is greater than that is being on an above fire floor initial search. Mm. If I had my druthers tomorrow, I'll choose the search.
Fair. It's hard to knock, man. I can't
His
knock
words.
Him. John?
Yeah. Remember when Reinwald came on and he said he's just going to go through the window with the hose line?
With the hose line, yeah.
Man,
this
that
is
was
my
the
point
answer.
Of attack, yeah.
He's like, if I'm going to be a monkey, I might as well be a gorilla. man, I like engine work. No offense to our gorilla friends on the truck, but I'd be on the nozzle. Good
Fair.
Question, though. I always look forward to the end of these so I can hear your guests.
No, dude, I love it because there's no best answer. I just want to hear why they want where they want. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Dude. I can't really eloquently say other. Just, yeah, I want to be on the hose line, man.
I love it. No, I love it 100%. Guys, you guys crushed it. The five questions for firefighters as a duo, probably my most, I don't think I've smiled this much ever doing the five questions for firefighters. So you guys crushed it, man. 100%. Hey,
Corley, really quick, we for our book, we did a promo code for your show. If anybody wants the copy, it's only $10 with the promo code SCRAP. On, you can just go to store.bookbaby. It's store.bookbaby, or you can find it on Amazon or anywhere. But if you put in that SCRAP, S-C-R-A-P code for the next month, you'll get basically you're paying costs for what the book costs.
It's hell yeah. Bucks, so,
yeah.
Use the
just
SCRAP.
Throw that up.
S-C-R-A-P.
Yeah, yeah, it's store.bookbaby.
Mine's signed, so.
Nah.
Yeah, there you go. No, 100%, man. Use that. And that's what I was going to say. The five questions for firefighters, another scrap in the books. Where can guys contact you? Where can they get the book? The best place for you guys for them to get the book, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, if you go to store.bookbaby, you can get it. But you can get it on Amazon or any platform. It's just it's cheaper. We can only do a promo code with that.
Right.
Yeah, Amazon. We got the audiobook. We had a guy named John read. That was kind of fun.
Good.
It's on Audible, iTunes, any place you get your books, media, there's ebooks, all that stuff. We got the full package, so yeah, you can find it there. You can hit me up on like Facebook or whatever. I'll send you a copy, whatever. But
no, 100%, man.
Book, baby. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And like you said, we're not in it for the money, man. Like we just think it's funny. We just want to see our friends laugh. And if you want to read some good pranks, it is.
Yeah. And if you want to share any, send them our direction. We'll enjoy them.
100%.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, I want to do my housekeeping, and then we'll close it out.
Thanks, bro.
The Honor the Fallen Fire Conference, it is coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow, is the kickoff for it, dude. This thing happened on accident. It was an exchange of text messages that turned into probably the best conference that's ever been put on in the state of Oklahoma. You've got, let me pull this out from under your book. Mark Davidson, Robert Ramirez, Jacob Johnson, Jeremy Sanders, Scott Thompson, Howard Reinwalt, Kyle Romagus, and Dennis Riley presenting over 2 days, and then a third day that is nothing but live fire hands-on training. I think there is two spots as of today, and they may even be gone by now, but two spots left in the live fire hands-on training. So if you want to get into those the hot tracks, get in there. Firehousevigilance.com, click on the links and you can find a way to register. That's it. That's it for that. The greatest raffle that's ever been put on the history of time and space. That's trademarked, I think, at this point. But so many people have donated swag, tools, conference passes for this conference. This conference is not, there is no money being made off this conference. After paying for people's travel and hotel rooms, everything else is donated, and all the money that is made from this conference is going to the families of the fallen firefighters that died in January in Winoka, Oklahoma. And so that is it. Every one of these people, and I take, there is no credit being taken from the amount of generosity being donated from the people coming, the support from the fire community for the giveaway. So if you haven't registered and you're in the area, register. And so that's the big thing I want to say. Other than that, guests coming up next week. I think Basil Ibrahim is coming up next. Dude, I'm excited about that. Jacob Johnson following that. Blake Stinnett, Robert Ramirez, Todd Edwards, Dina Ali. Guys, the Scrap has some amazing guests tonight. John Metz and Jeremy Olson. The book is Firehouse Pranks and Antics. Book Baby, give me the link again. I'm sorry.
If you just go to store.bookbaby.
Store.bookbaby.
Yeah, that's the easiest way, bro.
All right, there it is. So,
or Amazon or wherever, but that'll get you the code.
One thing I want to say, dude, I've gone to Texas twice in the last couple of weeks, and I convinced my wife that it was date night, and she loves it, so it's good. But I went to a fool's meeting, and then I got to catch Art of Reading Smoke with Rob Backer. That was a banger of a class, man. Unreal. But yeah. If you can catch it, catch it. That was one of the best tactics classes I've ever caught. Anyway, not the point. Point is, if you see me, man, tell me you want a picture, and I want to get a picture with you, because the big thing I want to do is I want to post the picture and say, mutts don't scrap. And it's a big thing for me right now. I really want to do it every time I meet somebody who listens to the Scrap. So, there it is. Scrap number 91 in the books. John, Jeremy, I hope you guys had a blast.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Thanks, it really was, man. It really, I'm telling you.
The best, man.
This was one of the funnest I've had in a while as far as just smiling. For everybody that listened live, and there we go, I'm going to catch you up a little bit quick. There's got to be at least a 4.9. David Pruitt, I think he's rating one of your guys' answers. I'm not sure which one. I won't even speculate. Justin C. Ply said, hitting the nail on the head. Eric Thiel said, wow, yes, agree. Culture is key. And culture, I think that was John. John threw it at culture, right? John. Yeah. All right. So there you go. Brian Bastinelli said, ordered. Looking forward to it. So
yeah.
There we go.
That's funny. I asked him to be in the book, and I never heard from him. But thanks, G. Appreciate you, man.
He's got it now.
Yeah, great.
Awesome. I will see you guys. On, I'm guessing, June 21st area with Basil Ibrahim coming back on. A lot of stuff going on with this conference, so I'm busy and trying to juggle everything. But thank you guys for being here tonight, tuning in. The questions, you guys, awesome guests. I hope the tone stays silent for everybody out there. Stay safe unless it's burning. Well, I hope the tone stays silent unless it's burning. Stay safe out there. I'll get it right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.